Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for joining me whenever or wherever you are listening. My name is Kwame, and welcome to the very first 1v1 episode of Soul on Ice, the podcast. This is a little different from what I do with my nephews, Akil and Elijah, every Wednesday. This is more of a personal chat that I'm going to be having with people that are in and around the whole hockey ecosystem. Now, what I mean by that is it could be a player, an executive, a coach, a new fan, an old fan, just people who I find interesting that I want to chat with one-on-one. These won't be every week like the regular podcast that we do. This is going to be kind of like bi-weekly or whenever I feel like something comes up, or if there's somebody that I just meet and I just want to get them on the air, I'll do that. It kind of takes me back to my radio days. I was mainly a, you know, solo announcer. I didn't do too much morning show stuff, so I never really did that group interview style. So this is kind of like me satisfying another itch, so to speak, especially during this COVID time, you know, when I can't be out there with a camera or a camera crew producing and directing content. So this is just another way for me to keep myself busy. And with that being said, I am very excited to bring you my very first guest. He's well known in the hockey broadcasting world for a very famous call he did back in 2016. Now, you can see him on Hockey Night in Canada, as well as hosting Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. He's got a new book coming out tomorrow, September 22nd. It's called One Game at a Time. Here's my interview with Hanarayan Singh. 13 years on the show. How do you feel about that?
I think that, you know, I always thought it had a lot of potential. And but it's great to see it progress. I mean, humble beginnings. We started off really small and simple, and now, right, you know, full intermissions, full pregame show, postgame show, and it looks great too for the viewers. So it's I'm happy to see how much it's progressed.
You know, it's funny. I do remember watching the playoffs in I think it's 2016, the whole Nick Bonino call. And everybody was playing, all the news channels were all over it. I'm sure when you got to talk to Nick, he probably had to have said to you that that's the best call that he's ever heard in his whole career.
You know, it was such a special moment. And specifically with Nick, when we were in Pittsburgh for the Stanley Cup parade, he came up to us at the dinner. And it was a really cool moment because everybody kind of had dissipated and I was kind of sitting at the table alone. I think one of my colleagues was sitting there with me, Harpreet from there. And Nick Bonino comes up and he goes, thanks for making me famous. And, you know, but it was a genuine moment. No cameras around, nobody else. And it was just him and I've kept in touch. He's a great guy, really, really genuine. And it's something him and I are going to carry on for our careers. So it's pretty cool.
How excited are you about the book coming out tomorrow? It's got to be a dream come true for you.
The book is really exciting, especially, Kwame, since I was able to incorporate my parents' journey coming to Canada, what they experienced, you know, so much also like little details that I've never been able to talk about before. But I've been asked all sorts of questions about my turban. So, you know, how long is my hair? How long is the turban? How do I tie it? How long does it take? How do I choose the colors? And it's really cool to see the reaction from people who are fascinated that you can have so much fun with it, right? And I think, you know, while it is a religious symbol and it means so much in our faith, but the fact that we can you know, mix up all the colors and have fun with it, people are finding that fascinating. And it was great to be able to get into so much detail about different moments along the journey. I'm really excited. This is one of the biggest highlights of my career so far, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I feel like you shared a lot of interesting things about your family. And I get a sense that you're a very focused, tight family unit type of person. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, this comes all the way from your parents and how they raised you, you know?
Definitely. And I admire the fact that, you know, they were in a small town in southern Alberta and came here in a time where it wasn't so easy to just go to the grocery store and find lentils and you know, all sorts of things they were used to from back home. And the curiosity from white Canadians at that time about, you know, this family from India who had moved to Brooks, Alberta, but they were still able to maintain their heritage and find a really cool balance. Like at no point in my life was I ever told that, oh, you know, don't participate in Canadian culture. And we were able to find a really great balance, and I owe it to them for doing that. And for their encouragement too, because when, even though this was a totally new endeavor for them in terms of hockey, in terms of broadcasting, because both my parents being teachers and kind of scholarly folk, they still encouraged me to give it a shot, despite other people around them saying that this was unrealistic. So that support and the support and encouragement to don't worry, pay for your own flights in the first few years and it'll pay off. And you know, all of those things is something that I'll never forget. And it's been a really big part of the journey for sure.
I think that's really interesting because, you know, minorities, you know, when we come from a different place, come here to Canada, you know, and you're like a first generation, you have that pressure of, listen, go to school, get good grades, get a good stable job, and just go to work and do your 30 years. So for you, especially in a South Asian culture, being raised that way, I'm sure a lot of people were saying, what is Hunter Ryan doing? He needs to throw that away because there's nobody that looks like him doing this. So I guess for me personally, I got to say to your parents, they are very brave people because it must have been very hard for them to just encourage their son to pursue something that he's had this dream of for so long.
Yeah, I bring up such a good point. Like there was a moment in the town of Brooks, our family doctor, also a South Asian individual at the time. And he asked my dad, you know, what does Hunter Ryan want to do when he grows up? And that's a question kids get so often, right? When you're elementary, junior high, high school, I would often tell people I want to be a hockey commentator. And there was kind of like a laugh and a smile as if, you know, that's so unrealistic. Like, what do you really want to do? And our family doctor said to my dad, well, you know, the chances of that happening, especially in sports, especially in hockey, are so slim to none. And so he discussed it with my dad and came back and gave me a very serious and blunt pep talk that lasted quite a few minutes about, you know, you need to be really realistic. The chances are so slim. And he goes, look at it, look at the hockey world right now. And this is, you know, the 1990s. And he said, which people of color are there at all covering hockey? And so what do you, you know, and the other fact that he brought up, that at the time in broadcasting, whether it was news or sports, a lot of times it took you 20, 30 years of being in the industry, and then you got to a position where you were an anchor, you know, someone on an on-air position. And so he's like, are you willing to wait till you're 50 or 60 years old to even get to that position? And it was something that really, I went home that day totally, you know, quiet, abnormally quiet, and really, I was shook up with that. And I started thinking about, oh my goodness, you know, this was just a dream, and I've got to be realistic. But my parents noticed that it had taken a toll on me, and their mentality was that you're young enough to give it a shot. And so go for it. If you really want to do this, go for it. And then if it doesn't work, you can shift gears. I mean, to this very day, my dad still says that, oh, you know, you can always go back and teach broadcasting.
Right.
They still encouraged me with buying me toy microphones and all, like, you know, they, they fueled that passion that they knew I had. And so, it was a great journey with their help.
It's so interesting. I think your moment, your universal moment, your universe speaking to you moment was that time you spoke with your family doctor, because you could have gone one or two ways. You could have literally have said, you know what? He's right. Let me just forget about that. And then that dream would have been gone. But you decided to stick with it, even though it sunk. It really was one of those things where the universe said to you, okay, if you really want this, you're going to have to dig deep. And I totally relate to you with that so much, because that was kind of like my journey has always been like that, where these harsh realities would come at me and I just had to dig deep and just say, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword.
Yeah.
You know?
And given that, you know, Kwame, like, you know, when I was growing up, and hockey is something that gave me so much joy. It helped me create friendships with my classmates and rapport with my teachers. My whole childhood would have been drastically different had it not been for hockey. And when you have such a love and a passion for something, and when I went to when I went to NHL games with so much excitement, and there's where I experienced racism, it hits home even more. It hurts even more, because it's and so, you know, when you talk about those types of moments, there's so many of them. I know in the town of Brooks, with just 10,000 people and such few people of color, the fact that the local radio station gave me a shot, that was also a very significant moment for me, because I really reflect on it and think that had they not done that, the seeds of doubt that had been planted in me, not even intentionally, but just people cautioning me so many times along the way, because they gave me a shot on the air, that was the moment that I realized, okay, if these guys can give me a shot, maybe someone else will. So I'm actually going to try it. And then, you know, you go to broadcast school and you still have teachers there saying, maybe producing is better for you, or you're really good at news, so maybe you should think about that. And I don't even necessarily blame them. Like, that's just, they were in a sense looking out for me, but I don't want my children, who are now 5 and 3, I don't want them to have to be able to, or to struggle through this. And I want them to just think that they can achieve whatever they want to achieve without those barriers. And we've made progress, but as you know more than anybody, there's a long ways to go as well.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that teachers are supposed to be the ones that help you dream. They're supposed to be the ones to say, I'm going to give you the tools, and whatever you do with it is what you're going to do with it. You are going to succeed or fail, but I'm going to give you all the tools you'll need to go in that direction. And God love them, but I know lots of stories like that. I remember George LaRocque told me a story of his high school coach, who went on to be a CFL coach for the Edmonton Eskimos, or the Edmonton football team, as they're known as now. And he told George, you know, hockey isn't realistic for you. You should play football. And I think there's a small group of people who say to themselves, you know, I'm going to prove that person wrong. And I'm sure, and I feel like you're in that category. But was it easy for you to love and enjoy hockey because of your sister, Kerndeep? Did it make it a lot easier for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she's been a big, huge influence in my life and part of who I am today and my personality. I owe a lot of things to her. And she had such a genuine passion for it. I mean, we grew up in the 80s there in Alberta, when the Oilers and the Flames were such good teams and such a big rivalry. And Gretzky was the hero. And I think one of the things, though, that she admired about him is something that I became, I really admire too about him, is that he was a humble ambassador for the sport. Right. And, you know, he would always give credit to his teammates, and just the way he carried himself was like a leader. And, you know, he gave everybody a sense of, he treated others with respect too. And even when he was breaking all those records, he was still so humble about it. And the respect, he was breaking all of Gordie Howe's records, but he was doing it in such a respectful way. And watching all of that was really cool. And then she helped nurture my passion by, taking me to games, decorating my room with me and with the Gretzky Hockey Shrine. And it just carried on even into my career when I, first ventured out into Toronto to work for a TSN internship. And she was just with me every step of the way. So a big influence, and I owe a lot to her, and forever indebted, to be honest.
Yeah, I tell you, that family support can take you that much closer to your dream. I'm a little bit older than you, so like the Mighty Ducks movie never really impacted me as much. How big of an impact do you feel that that movie is for yourself and for a generation of kids who traditionally may not have been exposed to the game of hockey?
That's a great question, and one that's not often asked, Kwame. I think it was huge, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I had developed imaginary hockey players based on that movie. There's a character in the movie who played a big role. Charlie was his name, and mm-hmm. Wayne Gretzky's middle name is Douglas. I created Charlie Douglas as the point above point per game player on my imaginary team, and I just think it really introduced people to the game who might not have been fans already, but then already existing fans, especially if you were a kid at that time, there was just kind of this magic to it, right? And it was inspirational. And then you had Paul Kariya play for the Anaheim Ducks, and he was such a special player too. And then eventually, they made it to the Stanley Cup final, and it all kind of came together, within a few years. And so I think that movie was pretty instrumental, and it probably doesn't get enough credit as it deserves. Nowadays probably should be talked about a lot more.
Yeah, it deserves a lot of credit for growing the game of hockey for a group of kids who probably would not even think about playing the game. And that's why I'm a firm believer in, using storytelling to help grow the game of hockey. Hockey needs that a lot more. I mean, I remember the impact Slapshot had on me as a kid watching that. And so and it's been such a long time since there has been a great hockey, even if it's just a fun, funny, satirical, hockey movie, I think it's well overdue. So,
yeah. I remember meeting you in 2016 at the World Cup of Hockey, and, yes. Soul on Ice had just just a year or so into that journey.
Yeah.
And the great job that you've done with that. And I mean, the entire hockey world knows about Soul on Ice, and then what the message was so ahead of the curve. If you think about what we're going through right now, and you think about what you had in that documentary, this message, you guys yourself, guys like Anson Carter, and you mentioned George Laroque and Willie O'Ree, that this has been out there for so long, but it's sad it had to come to something like this. And in Canada, it's Don Cherry and all that stuff that forced us to have these conversations, and now it's what's happening with George Floyd, Jason Blake in the States. And one of the things that gives me hope, though, is that this is a risk for teams and for hockey, but they're still taking a stand, because the risk is you're alienating a certain part of your fan base who, I talked about this before, I get this a lot, just shut up and talk about hockey. And so, when I go out there and I talk about this, or when with my colleagues, or, I'm with several other reporters or hosts or broadcasters at dinner, and I'm bringing this up, it's a risk, because, there's a certain group out there who doesn't want to be talking about this, or their viewpoints are, for lack of a better term, quite ignorant, because they don't want to be compassionate to the situation that other people are in. But despite the fact that this is a risk, and we've seen the Dallas Stars and other teams say, they've lost some season ticket holders because of this, but they're still willing to do this and fight the fight now and take a stand for it. And that's what gives me hope. Otherwise, I was starting to lose a bit of hope because of the fact that there's so many more divisions being created, and especially in the United States right now, it's scary, the rhetoric, everything that's being talked about and stuff. And you don't want more divisions. Sports is something that brings us together, and I think we really need to focus more on things that bring us in together and unite us. And so it, that's why it's so important for us to be having this conversation as a sport.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. And, you know, there was a time when, you know, I too felt kind of like disheveled or like, oh my God, what am I doing this for? You know, because, you know, the film came out in 2015. I worked on it for 3 years. And for me, it was more about creating this space, this visual space to you know, celebrate the history and the contributions of Black athletes in hockey, because it's never been done in that sort of way. And I felt that for us to go forward, to grow the game more, kids need to see these things, get inspired, because I got so many messages on Twitter and Facebook and emails from families saying, oh my God, we needed this. My son and I, we sat down and watched it. Hoki Redick, his daughter reached out to me on Instagram and she said, you know, that's the first time I saw my dad sit there focused on the television watching a documentary. But then, you know, we get to this point and it's just, there's a lot of anger, I feel. And maybe we need that to get to a safer place, but it is very important for us to keep these conversations going. It is very important for what you're doing. And, you know, with that, I want to jump to Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, because I said this from the very first time I kind of recognized what you guys were doing. I said, this is going to be the show that a South Asian draft pick, guy or girl, is going to say, this is the show that introduced me to the game of hockey. How did that, who was the brain behind that whole show and how it got together and the struggles you guys had to go through from the very beginning?
Well, you know, it's amazing because it's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC Sports at the time, who were running Hockey Night in Canada. And there were some individuals there, such as Joel Darling, some executives who just, they wanted to try something multicultural. And, you know, they decided to try it in a few different languages. And they tried some Chinese languages, Cantonese, Mandarin, and they tried Italian. When Mark Crawford at the time was the Vancouver Canucks coach, he was recently let go and he came on as a color commentator for CBC Sports for a bit. And, you know, he suggested as well that if you're trying different languages, you got to try Punjabi because, Surrey and the Vancouver mainland there and Toronto, like those areas you drive around and there's so many people from the community playing ball hockey. And just his experiences as a coach, I'll never forget him saying that he's whether he was pumping gas or getting groceries, it was people from the Punjabi community always coming up and wanting, they were so infatuated with the Canucks and they wanted to talk about it. And that stood out for him. And so once the CBC decided to try Punjabi in 2008, it took off. And the response from the community, I think it really made the community feel proud. It was like a statement that, okay, we're just as Canadian as anybody else. And I think everybody came together with it. The amount of media attention was just through the roof. And so from there, it was a pilot project that became something that, you know, okay, if there's this many people watching, let's continue this on. And then what you bring up there, I just in the first couple of seasons, I talk about this in the book where I'm at a minor hockey rink and I see this couple from afar. We end up chatting and I said, what brought you to the arena? And they said, well, we didn't know much about the sport before, or we weren't watching or fans before, but we watched your show and we fell in love with the game and we decided to put our kids in minor hockey. And bingo, that was the first moment I realized that, hey, we're literally growing the sport at the grassroots level. And so I totally agree with you. You know, there's certain Surrey Minor Hockey Association and in Brampton as well, the pockets of Canada where there's such a large South Asian population. Some of those, the president of the Minor Hockey Association in Surrey, Harbs Baines, he told me that so many of the kids watch the show. And it's only a matter of time till They come up through the ranks and make it. We have Jajar Khera playing for the Oilers right now, and Manny Malhotra is a coach in the NHL. And it's slim pickings right now, but I hope that there's going to be a lot more coming to the forefront in the future. We're seeing it on the broadcast side for sure now. My colleague with Hockey Night Punjabi, Randeep Janda, is a full-time host on the radio covering the Canucks. And Amrit Gill, the first woman on Hockey Night Canada Punjabi, she grew up watching the show with her grandma, and now we're in our 13th season and she's a part of the show. So it's really coming full circle, and it's beautiful to see the impact that it's having.
Well, you guys are, you've planted the seed. You're almost going to be like the Ron McLean. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be generation. You're going to pass it on. There's going to be a time when you're done and you're going to be passing it on to a new generation of broadcasters. What was that moment for you like when you realized this is happening? Because remember, there was a time when people said, this will never happen for you. There's no chance you're going to be a broadcaster in hockey, but now it's in front of you. What's that moment like? What are you thinking? What are you going through?
There's probably a few moments like that. I would say, some of the specific to Hockey Night Punjabi, when the Vancouver Canucks in 2011 made it to the Stanley Cup final and that run, and we saw how much of the Canucks fan base was tuned into our show and celebrating on the streets there, and how that was the show's success was mirroring the Canucks kind of becoming those cup contenders in those years. And then I would say still in those years, though, there was this uncertainty for the show, for me personally, for my career. I talk about it in the book that every time I called the Stanley Cup final and the Stanley Cup was awarded, it was a bittersweet moment because I didn't know if that was going to be my last ever game. And there was so many years of that because you didn't know, it took a while, I guess, to figure out how to sell the show, maybe from the back end. This was a new venture for everyone. And then it was just, we were still kind of the smaller second cousin of the rest of the show. You know what I mean? And yeah. So, and then when we got to the Bonino call, I think the Bonino call really helped bring us to the forefront in terms of mainstream. We got a ton of attention. I mean, there was a New York Times article, HBO did a story on us, and there was just, it just kind of continued on from there. And then I remember at that World Cup where we first met, and I was so green to the situation. Like, I was still learning like how to even act amongst everybody else and trying to figure things out. And, maybe not very comfortable yet in my own skin in that kind of environment. But when Sportsnet came and asked me to first give me a few games on the English side, I just remember the tears coming down, and I I was talking with the executive with Sportsnet, Ed Hall, at that time about, and I right away went back to my great grandfather, what he experienced in Canada, my parents, and here we are today. I'm getting this opportunity, and it's not just for me, it's for the entire community, what they've gone through, not having, it's similar to so many visible minority communities where you didn't have the right to vote before, didn't have the right to buy land, and then experiencing so much racism throughout the years. And now you come to this point where someone like myself is being given this opportunity. Those are hugely significant moments. I still have those moments, Kwame, where I got to co-present the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award just this season with the NHL Awards. Like, those types of moments for me are so special because, the first time I was ever given a vote for an NHL Award, I could vote for the Jack Adams Trophy for the Coach of the Year. It's, might seem like a small thing to an average person, but to me, that, those are such touching moments that make me emotional because it's such a blessing to be able to
solidifies.
Do that.
It solidifies all the hard work, all the, the people that said you can't do it, all the, I can't imagine what it must have been like for you after 9/11 and, just seeing the vitriol that was going around, and now you still got this dream to be within hockey. So, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot more to come for you, which is very interesting. You know, it's one of those things that's going to keep growing and growing. And I think it's just really cool to see, you know, what you guys are doing. And, you know, I was looking back at the parade in Pittsburgh, and, you know, I can tell you were like, okay, this is brand new. Like, there's thousands of people out there, and they all know you for that one call. That's why I go back to the universe has its funny ways of putting you in these right positions. That call was a mistake, was it not? That turned into something big. Explain that.
A mistake that turned into the biggest blessing of my career and, you know, for the show as well. I my pregame kind of setup, I write out the lineup so I can kind of visualize who's playing with who. And I made the mistake in my notes of having Nick Bonino for left wing, center, and right wing, and totally oblivious to it, printed out all my stuff. My colleagues, my producer, they all noticed and were laughing. Oh, Bonino, Bonino, Bonino. Little did we know that he was going to score such big goals and be a part of that HBK line with Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel with the Penguins that year. And I've talked about it in the book. There's multiple Bonino calls. And you know, just being there in Pittsburgh with 400,000 people and, you know, Kwame, probably one of the most craziest moments is obviously being on the stage right with the players is amazing. And that feeling, it was just electrifying. But along the way to get to that stage, there was people who had signs that said, "We love Hockey Night Punjabi." And wow. They were not Punjabi people. They were Pittsburgh didn't seem that diverse to me.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't see other South Asians there very much at all. But along the way, when we saw that, that was just like, that was unbelievable that we could be a show based in Canada to a niche audience, but somehow we could receive so much love from people and adoration, and just it was wild. And I think moments like that really prove that we are one. You know, it doesn't even matter how you look. It's sickening to me that we even have to have these discussions, because it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't make a difference at all. But moments like that prove, like, did we experience any racism in Pittsburgh during those days, during the Stanley Cup parade and the celebration? Absolutely not. We were like rock stars. And however, had it not been for that moment, had I just been visiting Pittsburgh just randomly, I'm sure, you know, there could have been a completely different experience. But I think that moment really proves how special sports can be and what it can do.
You know, I wanted to go back and get your opinion on where we are in hockey today. Again, with the George Floyd and all these things that are happening, the restart of the game in the playoffs. You know, it's been very tense.
Yeah.
You know. How has your community dealt with it? You know, the South Asian community, because bear with me for a second here. I remember as a kid growing up playing soccer, and, you know, we would go across the states and play in different tournaments. And we were playing in Virginia one time, and we stayed at this billet who was South Asian. And I remember that for two reasons, because A, the father was a beautiful man. And I remember I was having a difficult time in the household, and I was just in the evening, just walking around. I don't know why I'm walking around these people's house like it's my house, but I pass his door and he's doing his hair and he's fixing it up in the turban. And that's the first time he sat me down and said, "This is why we do it and this is how it's done." And I just remember, I must've been like 10 years old in awe, and I loved it. But the other reason why I remember is because their son hated black people.
Oh no.
He dropped all, like, it was the most insane thing, because here we are both minorities. I would think that we had this bond. And as a kid, I actually thought that, I was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't get the bill of that minority. I'm always at, you know, white houses. Now I'm at some, and he just hated me. And I didn't understand why. So my question to you is, you know, with all that's going on with Black Lives and this fight, how is the South Asian community dealing with all of that as source of support? Because allies can't just be white people. It's got to be everybody.
Yeah, you know what? It's a really good question. And there is racism within the South Asian community, even amongst South Asians. So that's something that's been around dating back to, you know, India, Pakistan, and those countries for a while. But I think this whole entire time frame has actually been very educational for everybody. I think it's important for people to learn that the plight of Black people in America and how bad it actually is. And, you know, there's also, I've learned a lot myself. Like, I've had to reflect on so many things and how I look at the world, but I've also learned even how to look at my own journey differently now too. And, you know, when it comes to certain situations, like, I think it's really nice to see how for some of those protests that were happening, there were people from the Sikh community coming out and helping. And, you know, I remember seeing images now recently of there was banners being held by the Sikh community saying Sikhs are for Black Lives Matter. And it was cool to see that. And I think there's more of a realization happening that, you know, if we want to make progress, we have to help one another. And regardless of any of our cultural differences, like if we come together, we're even stronger. So there has been a progress made. And, you know, we've had discussions like this amongst our friends within our own family too, that the plight of Black people in America, like the history has been erased so much where so many people don't even know where their ancestors exactly were from, who they were, because that history was wiped out. And I think all of those things are eye-opening for people, all of different communities to realize and understand. And this, of course, the police brutality stuff too, that's come to the forefront so much, and how rampant it is. And it's really shocking. And I think, so what I would say to answer your question is, I think this whole time has been very educational. And I think there's a lot of sympathy amongst different communities throughout this whole process that is developing.
Yeah, that's the only way we're going to grow, man. If we are doing this together, you know, and having each other's back. And I think as a hockey community, I think it shouldn't even really matter, you know, where you're from, what your background is. If we have each other's back, that's the only way we can really see this game growing. And I want to see it grow, especially in different markets. Not only I want to see more young Black kids playing the game, I want to see more Chinese kids, Japanese kids, East Indian. I just want to see it, because I think, like, I always imagine how beautiful the game will look, you know, when you see it like that. I remember when I seen Jujhar start playing for the Oilers, I was like, oh, snap, here we go. This is another one of those moments. How big is he in the South Asian community? I always imagine he's like a rock star for these kids right now.
Yeah, everybody is certainly aware. And, you know, it's really, you talk about the moments like when you first saw him, when he was first drafted, and then when he played his first game, when he scored his first goal, all of those things were big moments for us as a community to celebrate. And we were lucky to be able to do that through Hockey Night Punjabi, where we were able to showcase those moments and have them a part of the show and things like that. It is very significant, and people are definitely aware. I mean, when we're calling a game and he's in it, it's hard not to smile when you're saying his name. It's so rare to have a Punjabi name to, like, even when he has the puck, right? So I'm sure it's even probably audible to the listener too, that there's a little smile that comes up, because it's so unique to be able to say that type of a name when you're calling a game. So it is, but, you know, it's also something that we need to see a lot more of. And I hope we see that through a lot of different ranks. I mentioned before, we're making progress from the broadcast side. Hopefully there's progress from the player side, but from a management and in that sense too, in the hockey world, I will say, Kwame, like, I am you and I are both on the fan inclusion committee.
Yes.
Having Kim Davis a part of the NHL administration has, I believe, accelerated things in the right direction. Had it not been for her, I don't know where we would be in terms of hockey right now. And I think that's a huge help to have her leadership and to you know, she has the ear of Gary and Bill and the rest of the board of governors and things. So that's a really big step in the right direction that the NHL hired her, and so much going on behind the scenes that I hope will pay off in the coming years.
I, like you, have a 3-year-old. So for me, everything that I do is in reflection of, you know, when he gets older and what hockey's going to look like for him. How important are those two kids of yours to what you do each and every day, each and every week when you're broadcasting, when you're working in the hockey world?
Well, you know, it's made me realize how much more important representation is. When the NHL decided to have women participate in the NHL All-Star Game, we were sitting there as a family, and my son and daughter, you know, had their mini sticks out, and they emulate everything during the national anthems. They're standing with their chins on the mini hockey sticks and swaying with the anthem, and so they're watching with a lot of detail and attention.
Yeah.
And the look on my daughter's face, she gasped, her jaw dropped when she saw all the, you know, when she sees like long hair coming out of the helmets and realizes it's girls. And then she looks over with this, like her eyes widened, and it was like this excitement. And
yeah.
Like when she saw the fastest skater competition, and she was like, I want to be like her.
Wow.
And so that was a really eye-opening moment for me, because I saw it firsthand, and my wife and I have discussed that so many times, that like the impact that just that had on her, it speaks volumes. And then the other aspect is it's all coming full circle, where they're emulating the players with their mini hockey sticks and mini nets, but then they're emulating the broadcasters. They have a fake, a toy microphone as well. And
good.
You know, what's crazy is because like when they're pretending to call the game as they're playing, they'll do that in Punjabi. And then when they do their fake intermission interviews, it'll do that in English. And it's so cool because I didn't have that as a kid, and they don't need to worry about if they have a place anymore, because they can see it. They
yes.
can see women as a part of the broadcast. They can see people of color. It's becoming more normal. And so I think it's hugely important. And because of them, I'm seeing every single day how vital it is for us as a sport to bring more representation there.
And it to be comfortable in your own skin in that whole community of hockey. That's where the world of hockey needs to improve in. We need to make sure that people are comfortable in that space, you know. And I go back to your first day of school when your parents were thinking, okay, what are we going to do with Hadariah's hair? You know,
yeah.
Because in your community, you yeah. know, it, you, it's the rap. And it's interesting, as minorities, we have to think like that. We
yeah.
have to think about how, and it's not for us, it's for everybody else, to make everybody else comfortable, you know? So let me ask you this. Are you comfortable in your own skin as a broadcaster in hockey now?
More than I ever have been. And the reason for that is, you know, the opportunities that are coming, not just to me personally, to my colleagues at Hockey Night Punjabi, the conversations we're having, you know, I used to be way more conscious of how I looked, and, you know, being different and that. And it's also when you walk into an NHL dressing room, you know, I don't have to be shy and kind of scared or timid anymore. I can just be like, yeah, I'm here. Everybody knows I'm here, and it's not even a big deal. And so being comfortable in my own skin is something I've had to do so many times in my life, whether it was through school or our friends, or then, you know, even broadcast school. Again, I was like the only non-white person that I can remember in my broadcast class. And so that's had to happen so many times. Like, I still remember my very first NHL media scrum in Jerome Iginla. Thankfully, it was someone who was such a class act. And, you know, I don't know what he read off my body language or what it was, but he went out of his way. And we're standing there, I'm holding a CBC radio microphone, I'm standing there. And I guess he could tell, maybe I'm just trying to learn the ropes. And, but, you know, all the media is standing there and he's in the middle and he makes a gesture to put out his hand to shake my hand. And he said, "Welcome, I'm Jerome Iginla, and you know, everything good." And just that, it made me feel so comfortable. I never forgot it. And for him, someone of his stature, the captain of the team, the ultimate power forward at the time, you know, 50 goal scorer, Maurice Richard Trophy winner, I could go on forever. But for someone of his stature to do that and make me feel comfortable, it was like a breath of fresh air. And, you know, those types of moments really help you feel more comfortable in your own skin, and they stick out forever.
Yeah, he's so important to hockey. I cannot wait for the day I get an opportunity to tell his story. I really think that I think hockey missed the boat on Jerome, you know, because I know his impact for me when I realized there is this captain of the Calgary Flames and he's black. Yeah. I remember the impact that had on me, and I know a lot of the young guys that have been coming up, they refer to Jerome as their guy who they idolize so much. But
and just like Gretzky, he handled himself in such a class act. Once again, an ambassador for the game, the way he gave other respect, the way he spoke, the way he carried himself, how much he did for the community. Mm-hmm. He was the perfect individual, you know, to be an ambassador for, you know, the black community, for minorities. Yeah. And yeah, what a great guy. I mean, I just loved even when he retired and the jersey ceremony, when all of that stuff, and being able to celebrate him, is so special, because he's one of the all time greats in so many different ways.
Yeah. And Ron McLean, from a broadcaster's point of view, is one of the greats. I know he mentors you and gives you a lot of great advice. And for your bookie, that was such a great intro in your book from Ron McLean. How has he influenced your life as a broadcaster?
You know, it's so touching. I mean, I would say I couldn't have asked for anything more. I mean, this guy, he is the ultimate broadcaster, is such a scientist with the way he has with words, how he's able to communicate. Even what he wrote in the foreword was just so perfect. But then he's so understanding, despite him being who he is. He's so understanding of other people's situations, and, you know, always gave me time, always went out of his way whenever I needed to meet with him or talk with him. And it's just been really special, and I'm forever grateful. And he continues to do that for me to this very day. And I won't be surprised if he continues to, if I have his support for the rest of my life. Like, he's just been absolutely wonderful. And I would say it's really rare to find an individual like that in life who puts his own self to the side and is willing to go above and beyond to help others and to give them their time. And trust me, as you know too, from being in media, I mean, this guy is asked by anyone and everyone for their time to, can you do this? Can you do that? But for him still to be able to, and the amount of respect he gives everybody, the amazing memory he has. I mean, my parents feel so connected with Ron McLean because he's given them so much respect, and not on just one occasion, it's just multiple times. And you know, he's mentioned them on the air. He's you know, remembers my wife and my kids' names and things. Like, it's an unbelievable, if there is anybody who can welcome a family to the sport of hockey, it's him. He knows how to do it. And he's so genuine in the way he does it. So it's been really special.
And he's gone through so much with the whole Don Cherry thing. I feel for him because I feel sometimes like he's the only man on an island and he has to fight this. And, you know, I try not to do the Twitter thing, like respond back. But man, when people talk greasy about him, I sometimes give them a little inbox and be like, you don't know him. You don't know what he's gone through. You don't know how hard that was for him. So walk in somebody's shoes before you start to speak. But he's a great guy, and I'm so proud to have him as a friend, as I'm sure you're proud of having him as a friend. And I'm so glad that you and I met all the way back in 2016. You know, I hope that, you know, I know we're on the fan inclusion committee for the NHL, and we'll talk a lot more, but we need to talk more.
And back then I was so, like, you know, I was kind of really new to this whole experience, and I was just kind
of, I was new.
it's just kind of starstruck, and just, you know, even being there, World Cup and then Hockey Hall of Fame and all that stuff. And it was just kind of like, am I dreaming? That was the kind of moment it was, and we're meeting so many people, and there was just Hall of Famers all around. Yeah, like, I was sitting at a table that day, like, with Pat LaFontaine on my left, and, like, you know, it's crazy, right? So, but yeah, we do need to keep in touch more, and hopefully when things go back to normal post-COVID, we're able to connect properly.
We'll definitely get to sit on Chop It Up. I'm so proud of you. September 22nd, tomorrow, your book is coming out, One Game at a Time. It's such a great read, and it's more than a book for hockey fans. You know, it's so interesting, because when I was going through the book, I thought, you know, he had the same approach as I did when I made the film. I didn't want this to be a hockey film. I wanted this to be a film about these special people, and hockey is the backdrop. And I think it's the same of the book. The book is about you, your journey, your perseverance through adversity, you're being able to reach a goal, and hockey just happened to be its backdrop. And brother, I really pushing for this book. I think everybody should really pick that up.
Thanks so much. You know, and just to touch on that, Nick Bonino, I sent him a copy earlier on, and his quote that he gave me was exactly that this book is not just for the hockey world. It needs to be read by everyone. And I had a bunch of experiences. Last summer, I was on a flight, and a flight attendant who happened to be Black came over and saw me working away and typing away and all these notes around me. And he's like, what's a hockey broadcaster doing so busy during the summer? And I said, oh, I'm working on a book. Right. And then so it was cool, 'cause, like, he didn't have to confirm who I was or whatever. And we started chatting. He said, what's the book about? And I gave him the gist, and his reaction was, he goes, I'm definitely buying that for my daughter, because she needs to hear that message. And then I had my editor for the book, Joe Lee from Penguin Random House Canada, and he's from Korean descent. And I'm sitting beside him at a Penguin Random House Q&A for the company in Toronto. And he's talking about my book and my journey, and he was emotional. Mm. And he told me that so much of the book resonated, and there were so many parallels for his experience growing up in Canada. And he's from a Korean descent. And so that's why I really feel too. Yeah, it's a great hockey book, in the sense there's some fun stories that will make you laugh out loud. But then there's also a positive message of diversity through the lens of hockey and through the lens of a broadcaster. And that's why I hope, you know, a lot of people will be inspired after reading it.
It's real. I would say Gretzky much to you. I really love that guy. I've walked by Gretzky. I've missed Gretzky so many times, but I know he's a big influence for you, and I hope he gets to read the book. I hope you're going to send him a copy. I'm sure he'll be very touched by your words. But my friend, thank you so much. I love you, man. I love what you're doing. You keep doing it. And, you know, you're my first guest on my Soul on Ice podcast, 1v1. Usually I do it with the group of guys, but this is my first 1v1. So, and it's really interesting. I know your publicist is probably yelling right now, because I said to him, I was only going to talk to you for like 30 minutes, but when you rock, you rock. You know what I mean? You gotta chop it up with your brothers and sisters like that. Right.
So, I appreciate the love and support. sport, Kwame. I really do. Thanks for this. That's awesome that I'm the first 1v1. That's great.
So I know you probably got a lot more press to do for the day, but are you excited? Are you excited for it to come out and all that?
Yeah, it's so cool. It's such a great moment, especially like we're going to head out to the store that day and with my family.
Oh, you can do signing?
Buy the book. Yeah, we'll just, it'll be really cool. When we got the first copies, just like a week ago at home, we didn't open the box. We first did a prayer to say thanks.
Good.
And, my kids, I got so emotional saying the prayer, saying like, I never imagined this would happen. And, you know, thank you so much for this blessing. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my goodness, my kids are seeing me cry for be this emotional for the first time. And I was like, oh my goodness, I hope they're okay. But I couldn't even open my eyes. It was just the tears were full, the emotion was coming out. It's such a special moment. And that was when I got to open the first page and show my parents that I had dedicated it to them, because they had no idea. And it was so touching. And my wife told me afterwards, she said it was good for the kids to see that, because
yes,
she said they definitely asked her what was going on. And she explained that, you know, these are tears of joy and just being tears of gratitude and stuff. And my kids they came afterwards and like, they gave me a really big hug and like, just, it was like we didn't even have to talk about it. It was just such a, I'll never forget that moment. And so I'm excited to take the family, grandma, grandpa, and the kids and my wife to the store and Gurdeep to go buy our first copy, so to speak. And
I need a signed copy. I need a signed copy so I could put it on my bookshelf and store it, so that when my son's old enough, I can get him to read it.
That's beautiful. Right. Definitely. I'll make that happen. That's awesome. You're giving me so much love, man. I really appreciate it. I'll never forget this.
Thank you so much, man. And all the best in the future, brother. And I'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Hunter Ryan Singh. His book, One Game at a Time, needs to be on your bookshelf. So make sure you support and pick it up. Love that guy. Really glad he was my first 1v1 guest. And speaking of 1v1 guests, I'm still kind of playing with that name, 1v1. I was thinking maybe I should call these one-on-ones, because that kind of sounds like more of a hockey term, don't it? Anyways, we'll stick with 1v1 right now, and I hope you'll come back and join us this Wednesday for our regular scheduled show. We have from the Montreal Canadiens, Nick Suzuki, join us. So that'll be a very interesting conversation with the young Habs forward. We'll talk about playing in Montreal. We'll talk about being in the bubble. We'll talk about anything concerning hockey. It's going to be a great conversation. So listen, have yourself a great rest of your week. Be nice to your neighbor, and I'll talk to you soon. Quamster out.